Welcome or welcome back to Horse for Whore. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kayla.
And this is officially the start of season three.
What?
And we're starting it off with a murder.
Nice. I've been watching a lot of like true crime YouTubes and stuff.
Me too. I don't know. My like passion's been revived almost. I've been watching so much about scammers on Netflix.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you should watch this documentary called BitConned. I thought it was really good.
I just saw that last night. Like, I didn't watch it, but I saw it. So I'll put it on my list.
Yeah.
And then also, two things. There's one on Hulu that's just came out, and it's about these, like, two girls. I don't know if they're sisters or not, but they escaped, like, some cult or, like, polygamy thing, and it looks interesting. So I'm going to watch that. I'll get you the name. I forgot what it's called.
But okay.
We should watch that.
Uh-huh.
I'm still thinking about the twin flame thing, too.
Oh, yeah, that one books me up.
And then also, should we talk about Gypsy?
Oh, yeah. Gypsy, yeah. Like, she's released.
I'm so excited. I don't even know why.
I mean, she looks good, but also I just love the tweets of talking about her man's dick. Like, okay, girl.
That was funny as hell.
But yeah, I mean, she went to the Chiefs game to see Taylor Swift, too, which,
did she see Taylor Swift?
No, I think that from what I remember, could be wrong, state of Missouri told her she had to leave so she couldn't go to the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. That's kind of sad, but, like, it's probably for, like, safety reasons.
It's probably for the best. I mean, you had someone murder your mom, basically, so, you know.
Come to Illinois.
Yeah, just hop right over the river. They have a football team, just not as good. Boo.
Well, I don't know, so, yeah, sports.
In this episode, we're going to be discussing the murder of Kristen Smart.
Ooh, I've heard of her. Wait, weren't you going to do this one before? Like last year?
Yeah, then the research was like so much. I was like, no. But then I came back and finished it, finally. Yeah, I've been wanting to do this one since like, yeah, probably last year. First off, I want to say that the podcast Your Own Backyard by Chris Lambert is amazing. And there's so many details that I wasn't able to get in just in the format of like how we do our podcast. So if you want to hear more details, I definitely recommend listening to that whole podcast series.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kristen Denise Smart was born February 20th, 1977 in Augsburg, Germany, where her parents were teaching on a military base.
Oh, so wait, they were U.S. citizens?
Yeah, but they're just over there teaching. According to KristenSmart.org, which is funded and ran by her parents, Kristen, quote, came into this world with an adventurous spirit that never left her. She believed in her dreams and always seemed to know the right steps needed to reach them. As a young child, Kristen and her two... Oh, well, hold on, let me restart that. As a young child, Kristen, her two siblings, and her parents moved from Germany to Stockton, California, where she actually spent her teenage years and eventually graduated high school in 1995.
I want to go to California.
Kristen actually spent her summers in London or in Venezuela, becoming fluent in Spanish, or even working as a camp counselor in Hawaii. So when they say she was adventurous, she was, like, truly adventurous.
I want to travel.
Me too. Her top choice for college was actually in the Virgin Islands. But her family actually worried about her being so far away for so long that they actually compromised, and she went to California Polytechnic State University, which is called Cal Poly. Yeah. And it's only a 4-hour drive from her family. So, like, she's far enough away to where they're not going to visit all the time, but she's close enough that she could go home.
Like, 4-hour drive regularly or, like, 4-hour drive with traffic?
I don't know. Like, that's probably a good question. So Cal Poly actually follows a hands-on educational philosophy with, quote, learn by doing as a campus creed, which, that's cute.
So that's really smart. That's how a lot of people learn.
Yeah. And actually, I'm pretty sure that this school, like, inspires, well, any, honestly, college should inspire their students to kind of experiment and find themselves. And mm-hmm. Kristen was obviously no exception. She actually signed her emails with different aliases, such as Marisol, Roxy, and Trixie. And she would always include the quote, "Live your life to be an exclamation rather than an explanation," which I really like.
That's pretty cute, yeah.
Yeah. Kristen, by all accounts, was a beautiful girl. I actually have photos within the room for you to look at whenever you want. Mm-hmm. She was actually a swimmer and was 6'1" with high cheekbones and dark almond eyes. So she has naturally blonde hair. So, you know, mm-hmm. like traditionally, she's very pretty and she just is objectively pretty. She also was known for a little bit of melodrama. A friend later told investigators that it was not uncommon for Kristen to act drunk at parties, even if she was sober, which, like, what teenage girl hasn't done that? But okay.
That's funny, though. That's really funny.
Yeah. Kristen seemed happy, and when her family visited her in the spring of 1996, she was, quote, "enjoying it, the social piece, and I think she was exploring and finding her way," her father later said. So on the evening of May 24th, 1996, Kristen and Margarita Campos, I think is how her name is said, who was one of Kristen's closest friends, were hanging out when deciding what to do that night. Mm-hmm. Her friend actually described the campus as being pretty quiet because a lot of the students were obviously gone for the Memorial Day weekend, but the two actually decided to go out to an off-campus house party. At this time, Kristen nor Margarita actually had a car, so they rode with some other girls that lived within their dorm, and according mm-hmm. to Margarita, the gathering was basically like in a small neighborhood, which is, okay, normal. Mm-hmm. They stayed, they drank, they had fun, but after this party, Kristen and Margarita were actually dropped off at a street corner because they weren't ready to go back to the dorms with the other girls.
Okay, where were they going?
Well, they want to go to another party, but as they were walking to the other party, Margarita was actually like, "I actually don't want to go out. I want to go to the bathroom and I want to go, you know, to sleep." And so mm-hmm. the two girls actually split up, and Kristen ultimately decided to go to a house party at Kappa Chi.
Okay.
When Margarita was asked later at the when Margarita was asked later what Kristen was wearing, she described her outfit as short black Roxy board shorts, a gray crop top, and red sneakers with no socks. Okay. She insists that the two separated around between 10:30 and 11, and that Kristen was 100% sober by this time. So it had been a minute since they've been drinking. Mm-hmm. So around 2 a.m. on May 25th, the party at Kappa Chi was actually beginning to wind down. Fellow Cal Poly students Cheryl and Tim were leaving the party when they noticed Kristen laying in the grass outside.
Okay.
They're like obviously good people, so they stopped to help her up, later telling investigators that Kristen actually needed to be supported in order to walk. So she was like really intoxicated, or as some students later said, she might have been drugged. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they described her behavior as, quote, "weird," as if she was on something.
Right.
So as the trio headed back to the dorms, then 19-year-old Cal Poly freshman Paul Flores approached the three out of the darkness.
Okay.
Paul told Cheryl and Tim that he actually lived near Kristen's dorm and that he would help her get home.
No, we're good, thanks.
Yeah, so that's exactly what Tim and Cheryl said, and they were like, no, actually, we'll like keep going for a little bit. But eventually, as they kept walking, Tim actually had to split off because he was going past his house. So it was just Cheryl, Paul, and Kristen. During the walk, Cheryl later recalled that Paul would sometimes stop with Kristen and say, "You know what, you go on if you don't want to wait." And Cheryl described that it felt as if he was trying to get rid of her.
Yeah, that's exactly what it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
You creep.
So at about 2:30 a.m., the trio approached Cheryl's dorm, and Cheryl actually waved goodnight to Paul Flores and Kristen Smith. which allegedly this was like really close to Kristen's dorm, like within vision. So it wasn't like he was, you know, going on for another 10 minutes with Kristen. He was like going down the door, like literally down the block.
Okay, but also, if he's been trying to get rid of you guys, like, probably you don't want him to, like, walk her to her dorm door because, like, he's probably gonna, like, force his way in or something.
Yeah, and I just think, like, it's the 90s, so kind of, like, mentality around this stuff is, like, I feel like laissez blah or whatever the saying is, and that would not fly today.
So true. Yeah, okay, that's fair.
So Cheryl says that she remembers that Paul asked her for a hug, and when he, like, when they went to hug, he tried to kiss her, and so she was unnerved and disgusted. Those were her words, and then continued to watch the duo walk away.
That was probably a tactic to get her to leave.
Yeah, I would be like, ew, that is so awkward. I am mortified. I need to go. And I would just, like, dip off to my room, like, oh my God.
Yeah, maybe he did that on purpose.
Sadly, that was the last time that anyone other than Paul Flores saw Kristen Smart alive. So let's talk about Paul.
Yes.
He was known for being an asshole drunk. Surprise!
Shocker. I am so appalled. I had no idea.
Yeah. No pun intended. Anyway. Paul was actually described by fellow students as annoying, and his creepy behavior actually earned him the nickname Chester the Molester or Scary Paul.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, just walk her to her door, you creep.
Yeah. An unnamed student actually remembered that Paul would show up to parties uninvited, and he would creep in the bushes, basically watching them as they, like, frolicked around at these parties.
What a weirdo.
And actually his own parents described him as having no friends during this time.
Well, that's sad.
That is sad, but also, like, yeah, because he's a creep. Like, teach him not to be creepy. Like,
but why is he a creep, though? Like, what are his parents doing? Like,
yeah, well, they're creeps, too. Anyway, we'll learn more.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. In 1994... which was 2 years before Kristen disappeared, a woman identified only as Jane claimed that Paul roofied, raped, and discarded her like a rag doll when she was 15 years old.
Wow, that's so great. Super.
So Jane claims that Flores handed her a drink and she passed out. She later came to find Flores on top of her, quote, I didn't have any pants on and he was in me and I could feel him. He was staring at my face looking at me and he was enjoying himself, end quote.
That's really gross and disturbing. Yeah. Thanks for that imagery.
15-year-old child. And let's just remind everyone that in some states, if she got pregnant, she wouldn't be able to have an abortion. But anyway, I digress. This is not a political podcast.
Love it. I fucking love that. That's so great for us. Yay.
After that, Jane says that she blacked out. Thank God. And the next thing she remembers was being dragged down a dimly lit street with Flores pulling her by one of her arms and an unnamed friend of his pulling her by the other.
What the fuck?
Paul threw her down on her parents' front porch and rang the doorbell. Quote, they took off running. I remember thinking, if my mom's not home, I'm going to die right here, end quote. So Jane's mother rushed her to the hospital, and her father obviously called the police right away. However, according to Jane, the cops allegedly sided with Flores and believed his story that she willingly drank and had sex that night rather than believe the child.
Shocker.
Yeah. In 1995, just months before Kristen vanished, a Cal Poly student who identified herself as Sarah claimed that Paul used to stalk her. At a Halloween party in 95, Sarah claims that Paul allegedly walked up to her on the dance floor and grabbed her crotch. Quote, he grabbed me down there, and while I'm yelling at him, my girlfriend threw a piece of gum at his face, and he pushed her down. A group of male attendees had to, well, end quote, a group of male attendees reportedly chased him out of the party, which, like, what a dumbass. But Paul, Like,
I love the gum.
Yeah. Later that same year, Sarah claimed that Flores once again stalked her at another party, and when she went to the bathroom, he, quote, kicked the door open. He slammed me and then pushed me against the inside wall by the toilet. His hands were on my upper arms, and he started telling me all these sick things he was going to do to me. He told me he was going to rape me, end quote. But this badass bitch kneed him in the dick and kicked him in the shin and started screaming. So Sarah's boyfriend at the time actually confronted Paul, saying, quote, I got in his face and I told him, you're never going to do this again. You never even look at her. If you come near her, I will fucking kill you, end quote. And they threw Paul out. Fuck yeah, that's how I'd react too. That's scary.
Also, if that happens, just here. This is my advice as a nobody. If that happens to you, you knee him in the crotch, and then you keep going to where his dick doesn't work anymore.
Keep kneeing.
And then, like, make sure he gets on the ground somehow, and then just stomp on that shit.
And break a rib. Stomp on his ribs, too.
You can't rape somebody if your dick doesn't work, you little fucking asshole.
Castrate him. What? Is that too far? Oh, my God.
Well, we're trying to make sure that whoever does this or has to do this also doesn't go to jail.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
So, don't castrate him, but like...
That's a little far in self-defense. Can't really claim that one, but...
Create a disability for him.
Create a disability. So separately, a police report that's dated March 27th, 1996, 2 months before Kristen disappeared, stated that an intoxicated Flores was accused, quote, around Christmas time... of attempting to break into a Cal Poly student's apartment. He, quote, climbed up her balcony and she suspected he attempted to break into her apartment. The identity of the female is actually unclear, and though no claims of sexual assault were made, I have no doubts that he would have if he got in there.
Definitely. He's anyway, continue.
Yeah. So 6 weeks after that incident, Paul was actually pulled over for speeding, and he actually received a DUI that resulted in him losing his license.
I'll bet that did something.
So he's just an all-around dirtbag.
Just a great guy. Stand-up citizen.
Exonerate him. I'm sure that's for what sure. Some people would have no doubt doing. But anyway.
Free Paul Flores.
So on May 27th, 1996... 2 days after Kristen was last seen, her roommate Jennifer actually became concerned that she nor anyone else had seen Kristen. Jennifer reported her missing to the campus police. However, they believed that Kristen had gone on an unannounced camping trip for the Memorial Day holiday.
Did they? Why did they think that?
Jennifer persisted and called the city police, but she was then redirected back to the campus police, who gave her the same...
Are you fucking serious?
They refused to believe her, and to the point where Jennifer actually called the Smart family saying, hey, I'm so concerned, and no one is taking this serious.
That's so fucked up. Do they just have, like, a hat of, like, scenarios, and they just, like, pick one, and they're like, oh my god, she got camping.
Yeah, yeah. She's just, like, out. She doesn't have to tell you what she does. Ugh. Kristen's family, obviously, upon hearing the news, they were panicked, but the campus police told them, like, hey, don't worry about it. She's just out, like we were saying. But knowing
How
that their daughter...
Know that?
But and the Smarts, like, know their daughter. They're like, no, she would tell us. But the campus police were just insisting. But finally, her dad was like, no, and actually went straight to the freaking campus. Oh my god. Later, Stan said that the treatment of his daughter's disappearance by campus police was that of a, quote, lost bicycle. Yeah, horrible.
That's a good analogy. That's super fucked up, but that's a really good analogy.
So finally, on May 28th, the Cal Poly police finally filed the missing persons report. In the missing persons report filed by the campus police, the officer stated, quote, Smart does not have any close friends at Cal Poly. Smart appeared to be under the influence of alcohol on Friday night. She was talking with and socializing with several different males at the party. Smart lives her own way, not conforming to typical teenage behavior. To which I'm going to say, just stop right there. It is not her fault. Yes, Kayla, double birds is the correct option.
Yep.
That is the correct option.
First of all, file your goddamn police report and keep your stupid ass uneducated opinions out of it.
Yes. Smart lives her life her own way. What does that even mean? She's a normal human being?
She's a whore. She was talking to so many guys.
She doesn't deserve to be disappeared for that, for being like a human with autonomy and opinions. Like, heaven forbid.
Women can't want to have sex. They need to be told when to have sex.
That's what some people probably believe.
Definitely. Those are called incels.
Yep. 2 days after Kristen was last seen, Paul was actually arrested again for an outstanding warrant related to the DUI. During this arrest, the officer noticed that Paul had a black eye and scratches on his hands and knees. What the fuck? And when questioned about this, he told the investigator that the injuries were the result of a basketball game.
I, too, take a basketball to the eye when I play basketball.
Also, you have no friends. Like, you ain't like playing pickup with the boys? Like, no. However, when officers questioned another student who was at the game about Paul, he said that he showed up with those injuries. Mm-hmm. Paul Flores was officially named a person of interest in the case, and Cal Poly still had jurisdiction over this case, but they enlisted the help of two investigators from the DA's office.
I don't understand why the campus police are the ones with jurisdiction, though. Like,
I know, and it's the 90s, which that will be talked about in the, at the end of this.
Okay.
So over the next week, the investigators spent hours questioning Paul about the frat party and walking Kristen home. Wow, and walking Kristen home. The more they questioned him, though, the more the inconsistencies popped up. The first inconsistency is that black eye. Paul claimed it was from the basketball game, but he later admitted, after being questioned for several hours, that that was a lie and he'd hit his face on the steering wheel while trying to change the truck stereo.
Oh, bro. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I know, like, come up with a better lie, number one. So Paul claimed that he watched Kristen walk up the pathway to her dorm. However, Paul's roommate has a different story, claiming that Paul bragged about, quote, walked the missing person home and then came back, as in he went in her room. When the roommate later jokingly asked Paul what he did to Kristen, Paul laughed and said, quote, she's at home at my parents'.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes. So while Paul was declared a person of interest, investigators had done little more than question him. Finally, on June 5th, which was 11 days after Kristen went missing, the investigators searched her dorm and found nothing of interest. Mm-hmm. On June 10th, 16 days after Kristen's disappearance, the police finally searched Paul's room. As three trained cadaver dogs walked separately throughout the more than 600 dorms, each canine independently alerted to Paul Flores's room. By this time,
that's not good. Cadaver dogs alerting, that is not good.
And all three separately. By this time, the school year was over, and Paul and his roommate had actually moved, taking everything with them. And a cleaning crew had already disinfected the room, potentially destroying evidence. Potentially.
Sounds about right.
But, despite the room having been cleaned and cleared out, all three cadaver dogs alerted to the same areas. A quarter of a mattress that was specifically Paul's, a trash can, and the telephone.
Hmm.
The mattress and box spring were then removed, and a fourth cadaver dog was brought in. No information was given to the dog's handler to prevent him or her from inadvertently signaling to the dog. The dog immediately alerted to the spot where the mattress and box spring had been and was able to pick out a wastebasket from the lineup, immediately coming to Paul's. But
not good.
While the investigators were impressed with the results, they stated, quote, dogs can't testify in court.
Okay.
Which, like,
their handlers can.
Yeah, and also, like, you can talk about, like, the science behind that. Like, okay. Like, you just have a handler testify about the science behind it.
Not real.
Yeah. and the investigators actually worried about the handler's credibility on the stand. Additionally, the police took so long to request a list of the outgoing calls from Paul's room that the records were actually deleted by the time they got around to it.
I love that.
That's so great.
It's just so nice.
Paul actually agreed to an interview, a police interview, and refused to take a polygraph, which I can't really blame him, but anyway.
And polygraphs are garbage.
So. Yeah. So, on June 19th, 1996, Paul partaked in a 90-minute taped interview. Mm-hmm. This was 9 days after the cadaver dogs alerted on his room, on the stuff in the room. He admitted that he showered on the night of the 25th, which was a detail he previously lied about. Throughout this session, mm-hmm. Paul appeared visibly uncomfortable, pulling his arms inside of his shirt and bending at the waist as if he was trying to curl into the fetal position. But just as the officers thought Paul was about to confess, he called their bluff by stating, quote, if you're so smart, then tell me where the body is.
Okay.
He then told the investigators that he was done and ready to leave. However, when asked why he was ready to go, Paul stated he had, quote, some stuff to clean up. When asked what kind of stuff, Paul said, quote, concrete. And the investigators asked where this concrete was. He said, quote, my mother's house. Which, like,
why are you answering these questions, dude?
And police, are you jotting them down, maybe? Like, concrete at his mommy's house? Like, maybe just go and see what that's about?
Like, he literally has such a big-ass ego to answer these questions.
Yes.
Like, shut the fuck up. But also, like, I'm glad that you didn't because you're a piece of shit, but, like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, dummy. So, after a month-long blundered investigation by the campus police, finally, the sheriff's office took over on June 26, 1996.
Thank you for finally stepping in and doing the job that you're supposed to be doing all along. Yay you! Anyway.
So, within 3 days, a search of the campus was organized, which consisted of, yet again, more cadaver dogs and nearly 400 volunteers, but surprise, surprise, nothing of interest was found. 2 weeks later, a search warrant for Paul's parents' home was granted, and despite the fact that the cadaver dogs alerted to Paul's dorm room, no dogs were present for this search, and a forensics team was also not present.
That sounds like protocol.
Rather, the police claimed that they were doing, quote, a visual search, stating that they were just searching for things that belonged to Kristen and not her actual body, which, like,
like, why does he have her stuff, though?
What leads you to believe that she went there willingly with this guy who's a known creep?
Well, she was just camping for Memorial Day weekend. Like, come on.
Yeah. Unsurprisingly, nothing major was found, but they did discover that both Paul and his father, Reuben, had newspaper articles of Kristen's disappearance under their mattresses. At this time, Paul's name had not been released to the public, so he wasn't even mentioned in the articles, which makes it even more weird. The only people that know that he's a suspect is basically the police and Paul.
That's weird.
The Flores actually owned a rental property where Paul's mom, Susan, had been staying because her and Ruben had recently separated. The police were aware of this property, but later claimed that they didn't know that Susan was actually living there, so therefore they did not obtain a search warrant.
I am so surprised.
And because of this, the newly laid cement patio in the backyard went undiscovered.
That's just so wild. That's crazy.
It's almost as if Paul told you he had something to do with concrete at his mother's house and you didn't listen. Okay, that's fine.
He was joking. It's just boys being boys.
Mm-hmm. So in August of 1996, Susan actually decided to rent out that home. No idea where she went, but she decided to rent it out. Mm-hmm. And as was later revealed on Your Own Backyard podcast, the tenants Mary and Joe moved in on October 1st, 1996.
I would be so fucking pissed if I rented a house only to find out that there was a dead body on the patio, like under the patio.
Yeah.
I'd be fucking pissed.
And they were completely unaware of the Flores' involvement until they started to receive postcards and letters in the mail. Because by this time, his name was in the public and people were threatening the family.
Wait, what family? They were threatening the Flores?
The Flores', yeah. Because everyone believed that it was Paul and that Ruben probably helped somehow. So that's the, word on the street.
That's a supportive dad.
Yeah, totally. Mary decided to keep every single postcard and letter. And she noted that every morning at 4:20 a.m., a beeping sound could be heard coming from the concrete planter underneath the bedroom window.
What?
Yeah, almost like... Okay, well, hold on. Mary and her mother later told Your Own Backyard that they would poke a stick in the planter trying to find a source of the sound, but they never would. And Kristen actually worked a job as a lifeguard that began at 5 a.m.
So you think it's a watch?
Yeah. Mm. A few weeks after moving in, Mary was washing her car in the driveway when something caught her eye. It was a woman's earring stuck in the cracks of the concrete, which she described as small, dangly, and teardrop-shaped with a turquoise gem in the middle. By all accounts, this earring actually looked like the necklace that Kristen had been wearing in the missing person flyers around town. On the back of this earring...
What a sloppy job.
I know! And Mary actually noticed a dark red substance in the form of a fucking fingerprint.
What an idiot.
So Mary, being the down bitch that she is, puts it in a plastic bag and says, oh shit, this is weird as fuck, and took it to the police.
Good for her. She's awesome.
But what happens to that key piece of evidence remains a mystery to this day. No one has any idea.
Wow, that's so great. I'm so happy for that. Wow.
And so while Paul Flores remained the only person of interest in the case, and despite numerous pieces of evidence that indicated he is at least complicit in Kristen's disappearance, he was not charged with the crime.
Wow.
Eventually, Paul went on to work various jobs, but was subsequently fired from multiple places when the employers learned of his possible involvement of a missing person. Kristen's family actually sued Paul when they learned that he was about to enlist in the Navy. It was actually a $40 million suit that claimed Paul, quote, took advantage of Kristen in a drunken state and murdered her on the college campus. During the civil suit, the attorney actually deposed several key people, including Mary and Joe, the tenants of that house. Mary went on to talk about the earring, and to her shock, this was actually the first time that the Smart family and their lawyer were hearing about it.
That is, communication is so yeah. bad.
And so Kristen's family were like, hey, can we see that earring? We want to identify if it's actually hers. But then they were later told that it was never booked into evidence.
Where did it go?
Oh, yes. Don't worry, though, because the sheriff said they had conducted a, quote, visual inspection, and it was determined that the earring was similar to, quote, one a child would wear, and therefore not Kristen's. So don't worry. So what'd you do? They know better.
Did you give it back to Mary, or did you just throw it away?
Oh, I just said throw it away. Are you kidding me? Yeah, they still don't know where it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tossed it. Someone tossed it, for sure. That's a cover-up. No, I'm just kidding. It's probably not. It's probably just incompetence, but, like,
yes, absolutely, yeah. Incompetence. So, furious with Mary and Joe for cooperating in the lawsuit and participating in the deposition, they were actually evicted by the Floreses. But before they were forced to leave, Mary and Joe said that investigators could search whatever the fuck they want around that property.
Good for them. Wait, can they do that, though?
I mean, probably, I guess, right? They probably just need the permission from whoever, like, the resident.
Whoever is living there, yeah. Good for them.
This time, cadaver dogs and a geologist were brought along. And the dogs actually alerted to a spot on the side of the house where the trash can stays. On the west side of the backyard, the geologist found anomalies under the concrete, and while this seemed promising, he actually admitted that they were more likely natural and not man-made. However, he later told police that this was the first time he was searching for a body and he was not using the recommended technology. So who knows if he was was right at that point.
Okay, but, like, why do all that if you're not going to use, like, yes, the recommended? Like, what was the point? You just wasted everyone's time.
Everyone's time. And then lied by omission. In an interview on May 23rd, 1997, the sheriff stated, quote, "We need Paul Flores to tell us what happened to Kristen Smart. The fact of the matter is we have very qualified detectives who have conducted well over 100 interviews, and everything leads to Mr. Flores. There are no other subjects or suspects. So, absent something from Paul Flores, I don't see us completing this case," end quote. So just telling Paul that if he keeps his mouth shut, everything's going to be fine, and he will not be caught. If he's the guy who did it.
Well, something tells me that he can't keep his mouth shut, though.
Yeah.
But also, isn't that so stupid? Like, the only way that cops can do their job is if, like, someone just talks too much, like, I feel like we should probably fix that, don't you think?
Gives them the evidence, yeah. And I feel like it's a little better since the 90s, like with DNA testing and like CCTV, but like, come on. Like, but imagine how many murders are unsolved just because no one's talked. Like, that's so sad.
I know. The cops should just be able to do their job. Like, if you...
Yeah.
Like, get better. Just get better.
So in July of 1998, that buffoon of a sheriff actually left the role for another job. And during this same month, the sheriff's office actually stated that they were merely assisting the Cal Poly police with the investigation.
Well, thanks so much for your assistance. You assisted so well.
And the Cal Poly police were like, "No, dog, we turned this whole case over to you."
Like, what the hell is that?
In early 1999, thankfully, a new sheriff named Patrick Hedges took over the office, and his very first order of business was to contact the FBI for help in the Kristen Smart case. Thank
Good
God.
For him.
Yeah.
At least someone is doing it.
A search warrant was served on Susan Flores's home on June 19th, 2000, and the affidavit read, quote, "Kristen Smart is deceased and either died in Paul Flores's dormitory room or was placed there for an unknown period of time. Based on the information in this affidavit, Paul Flores is responsible for or has direct knowledge of Kristen Smart's death and or disappearance. Reasonable cause exists to believe that Kristen Smart is buried in the backyard of 529 East Branch Street." For 9 hours, FBI agents searched Susan's home. And on the In Your Own Backyard podcast, Chris noted that since that last search, a garage has been built over where Mary had found the earring. using more advanced ground penetrating radar, a quote, man-made excavation about 6 feet long and 5.5 feet deep was found in the backyard. Sadly, despite this discovery, a decision was made to not dig up the yard that day.
Why?
Well, there's actually conflicting reports as to why. Some people present claim a vote was taken and that the majority was to not dig it up because it was going to be too expensive to replace in the event they found nothing.
Sir.
Others said there was no vote and that the equipment that they used was so far advanced that they actually felt confident and that no digging was necessary.
Okay.
But
you're getting taxpayer money, like...
Yeah, don't be stingy now, honey. Like, spread the wealth. Y'all be using this how you want. Don't be stingy now.
Yeah, for real. Come on.
So, regardless of the decision not to dig the site, the Smart family and the surrounding community was fucking pissed.
Yeah.
And this case went cold for nearly 20 years.
I would have just dug it up myself.
Yeah, I just would have been like, fuck it. Give me a fucking shovel, bro.
Yeah, if you get far enough down to, like, present them with a body, then what are they gonna do? Like, sue you? Doubtful.
In 2002, Kristen was declared legally dead. In 2019, Chris Lambert started the famed podcast Your Own Backyard that specifically focuses on Kristen's disappearance. The podcast has actually been credited by both the Smart family and the Sheriff's Department as being crucial to the developments that brought the case back to life.
How awesome does that guy feel?
I know.
Like, that's like every podcaster's dream.
I know. I just love it. And it's a great podcast. Again, I cannot recommend, like, how much he inspired me to do this case, and I am not doing it justice. Please go listen to Your Own Backyard after you finish this one.
I always love, like, especially the podcasts that have, like, the journalism aspect to it. Like, they just do, like, a bunch of FOIA requests and shit. Like, that takes so much time and energy and effort. And you can do that when this is your whole job. But, like, I just really love, like, how much effort they put into it.
And I'm envious. I'm like, damn, wish I was, like, that fucking smart about that. Jeez.
I know. Ugh. Like, how do you even go? Like, you have to be, like, a journalist.
That's your job. Yeah. Right? Yeah. You went to school. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure. If you didn't, that's fucking badass. And call me.
It's true. Like, let us help you out a little bit.
So, during the 20 years that Kristen's case was cold, the police made incremental movements. They executed search warrants, submitted items for DNA testing, and conducted nearly 100 interviews, but still, nothing seemed to move the case forward. Mm-hmm. That is, until February 2020, when the authorities executed search warrants at 4 locations in California and Washington State. During these searches, they recovered what the sheriff's office later described, quote, items of interest.
Okay.
In March 2021, investigators once again used cadaver dogs and ground penetrating radar at Ruben Flores's property. During the search, though, they did not find Kristen's body. However, they did find human blood and fibers in the dirt that matched the colors of the clothing Kristen was last seen wearing.
That is so crazy that, like, it's been 20 years.
Yeah, and you can still find that. Oh, that's like a specific theory. I can't remember. But it's a very specific theory. It's like you trace DNA. You always leave traces no matter what. So theoretically, a crime can always be solved. Theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, this was not enough to arrest Paul. But fear not. On April 13th, 2021, Paul Flores was arrested and charged with murder.
Good.
Ruben Flores, his father, was also arrested that day and charged with being an accessory after the fact, which, like, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that it's, like, really hard to live at home and bury a body in your backyard with at least one parent not being somewhat aware.
He probably had his dad help him, honestly.
Yeah, that's, yeah, allegedly. That's our opinion.
Yeah. That's just, like, speculation, obviously, yeah. But...
The day after the arrest, the district attorney stated Paul Flores, quote, caused the death of Miss Smart while in the commission of or attempted rape, and Ruben Flores helped to hide her remains. No surprise, both the father and son pleaded not guilty, and the two men made their first courtroom appearance on July 14th, 2022. Notably, Kristen's body to this day has never been found, so they were sort of facing an uphill battle when trying to convict without a body.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, on October 18, 2022, Paul Flores was found guilty of murdering Kristen Smart. Sadly, Ruben Flores was actually found not guilty of helping to hide her body, and I'm assuming that's probably just the lack of, like, concrete evidence, and there's enough reasonable doubt. Like,
exactly.
I'm sure so, that's what got him off, yeah.
While he probably should have been in jail, like, that's actually the justice system working the way that it's supposed to. So I do appreciate that.
Paul was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison with a chance of parole at about 15 years.
That seems a little low.
Yeah, that's a little low for my liking, but... Alas, at least we know that he has 15 years minimum.
And also because it took so long for them to do that, like...
So unfortunately he lived, like, his good years outside of prison, sadly.
Mm-hmm. But...
And he's still going to be young when he gets out. Relatively young.
Well, like, he was, what, 40-something?
Yeah, 40-something. 15 years? Yeah, that's fair. God, that's still young. Fuck.
But, like...
He'll forever be known as a convicted murderer.
Like, yeah. ED, like, will probably hit him hard, you know?
Yeah.
So when he gets out, like, you know, maybe he'll just be like an old man.
Yeah.
Who has to sit in his little, like, recliner and watch TV.
Yeah. I'm assuming that men who rape probably don't have the best relationship with their dicks. So, yeah. Let's hope for ED.
So yeah.
So, Judge Jennifer O'Keefe, who oversaw the case, stated at sentencing, quote, Mr. Flores, it is necessary to remove you from society so that you can no longer prey and victimize women. You deserve to spend every day you have left behind bars.
Correct.
Hail to the Yale. So, recently, Jeffrey Armstrong, who is the current president of Cal Poly, or was at least at the time of this research, acknowledged that the school should have acted differently during the investigation. In a statement, he said, quote, We are very sorry for what the Smart family has endured. We recognize that things should have been done differently, which, like, thank you. That doesn't change the outcome, but that is, you usually don't see schools apologizing.
Yeah. It's good that you recognize that, and you told... like, the whole community, but also, please take the next step.
But also, fuck you.
Respectfully, you fucking suck. But yeah. Like, thanks.
So the Smart family said they are still left with a void because they can't bury their daughter and they have no idea where she is.
Yeah, where the fuck is she? That's so upsetting for the family, like, to have to wait, like, 20-something years for anything to happen. That is so frustrating.
I'm sure they lost members of their family that never got to hear the outcome of this. And, you know, by now the pandemic has happened. I'm sure something, tragedy struck their family. Like, ugh.
Yeah. And, like, I can't even imagine to have, like, someone in your family go missing. And then it's been so long that they're legally declared dead. Like, you have no idea what happened to them.
Yeah.
That would just be so...
hard.
I don't even know the... Yeah, I don't even know, like, the word. Like,
there's not even a word for it. Like, oh my God.
That was just, yeah, like, that's just such a hole. Like, you would never get closure that way. That's so upsetting.
And you're forever changed. Like, nothing will go back to the way it was. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. And can you imagine, too, because there's no body or whatever, like, you saw someone who kind of looked like that person.
Yes. You'd still have, like, even though you know that you shouldn't. Hope.
Yeah.
Yes. That would still be there.
So tragic.
There are some encouraging moments from the case. In 1998, the Kristen Smart Campus Security Act was actually signed into law, and it requires all college campuses to contact the police immediately mm-hmm. for any cases of violence against a student, including if they've gone missing.
That's great.
Kristen's family has also started a scholarship in honor of her memory. And the website, kristensmart.org, which is run by her family, eloquently stated, quote, "Kristen loved the dawn of each new day, but always had a plan for the future. Sadly, her opportunity to live those dreams was violently taken away, but we now have an opportunity to let her dreams and aspirations live on. Through the Kristen Smart Scholarship, her memory will live on, and we can help other college-bound women pursue their dreams," end quote. And that is the murder of Kristen Smart.
Well, thanks for that. I would love to know where her body is.
Me too.
Oh, is this the last picture that you put in there?
What?
Is this Paul Flores when he got convicted?
Yes, Paul and his father, yeah. Yeah, and they look disgusting.
They look exactly the same.
I know, fucking little piggies.
Wow. Okay, I want to see a younger picture of Paul, though. Hang on.
Oh, yeah, look it up, yeah. And we'll have these on our Instagram, because that's what we do stuff at. So if you want to look and follow along with us and judge them just as we are, head to Horse for Whore on Instagram, which is also linked in our bio. What?
So true. Oh, he looked like a douche when he was younger, too.
He looks like a Chester the Molester. But that was our very first episode of season 3, and we hope you enjoyed it and stick around and hang out. We are inconsistent as ever, but we are still so here true. For you.
I mean, that's just like our thing, though.
That's us. Would this be Horse for Whore if there was a consistent schedule? No, this would be like a real podcast.
That's crazy. One day we will be consistent. One day. Just a little side hobby, you know, like we will get there. We will get to a consistent level at some point. Maybe not season 3, but maybe season 4.
Yeah.
Stick around.
Bye, love you.
Okay, bye.